Maybe. All right, we're finally live. Well, welcome to the situation report slash roundtable slash new format slash roundtable slash sit rep. Sorry we're late tonight. It was it's been a day. So I'm going to change up the format yet again for the show, mainly based off of events over the last couple of days. The original ideas I had for this, just they're not panning out. So the intent of this show that I wanted from the very start was twofold. One, to give people a place to go to get real information and get prepared. Still committed to that and still want that to be the focus of this channel. Saturday really opened my eyes to what the, not just what the channel's providing, but what all of you want to hear from us and see from us. So it also opened my eyes to the fact that there's a hunger for real information for a lot of these narratives that are not just being pushed, they're going to accelerate over the next couple of weeks. So that was the catalyst for the change. And I'm sure if you watched me on Saturday, you could see the fatigue and the fact that this, you know, this is a pretty taxing schedule when you're doing the, you know, multiple roundtables. So to give these guys a break, to give myself a break, we're going to dial it back a little bit and get to a more manageable and more accommodating schedule, because it doesn't do you any good, doesn't do us any good if everybody's burned out and week over week we're not making any bringing our A game. So that's a big part of the change. There's so many things going on right now. I want to just get to the core stuff. So we're seeing the Biden removal and we're in Act 3 of that, which is Act 1 was the diagnosis for the entire population to see that there's something wrong with Joe. Act 2 was the feigned or the faux internal battle about should Joe stay or go. And now we're in Act 3. Joe's sick. Joe's got to go. And they either take him out through the 25th, they take him out through assassination, or he gracefully bows out and goes off to the greener pastures. But either way, he's going. That's topic one. Topic two is the whole Trump situation. What's next with Trump? What happens next with Trump? We could talk about Vance. I'm not really keen to talk about Vance, but we could talk about Vance. And then three is the situation in China with supposedly Xi Jinping having a stroke today or yesterday in a CCP meeting. And then the situation that's going on with the, there's now more and more rumors of some kind of a peace deal in Ukraine. I don't buy into that, but you know, there's more rumors. So that messaging is pretty interesting too. I'll open it up to you guys, let you guys decide where you want to start. In fact, Mr. Everett, why don't you start us off? Cause I know you've got a pretty good finger on the pulse, and then Chris will go to you.
All right. I'll start with Ukraine. Kind of the piece that's in the background amid all of the other things that have been stealing the spotlight. This is actually a very, very big deal for a lot of reasons. Zelensky is now open to peace talks and a negotiated settlement, which is, you know, obviously is how wars end. Why are they doing that? Because they know the cash cow is about to dry up. You know, plain and simple. They know one way or the other, the jig is up. Their betters, his boss, has told him, hey, we're done here. You know, you guys didn't perform as expected. And of course they couldn't. You can't have a combined arms fight if you don't have combined arms. You have one at a time.
Like it's, you can't fight with bullshit. You got to have weapons.
No, you know, this is ridiculous. But what's more ridiculous is the money laundering that was going on there, the psychological operations that were being run, you know, trying to, the media trying to tell everybody the opposite. You know, you see this on social media, you see it on Twitter, the NAFO crowd. It's, you know, I performed a little experiment for them on the 5th of July or with them. They were unwittingly on this. Chum the waters a little bit to see if they were still doing their swarm attacks that they do. And they absolutely did. Because I predicted that, you know, Zelensky is going to end up getting Gaddafi'd. and which he will. Okay. He's going 100%. To. They all end up getting put on ice, some more dramatic than others. And what's going to end up happening with him, you know, and I put it out, I did it in a very jocular way. And of course, they all came out, right? Scurrying like little rats. Ah, I got to get in there, you know. Well, what's very interesting about that is that people love to do their little Twitter circles, right? Their little Twitter circles. All my people, right? All my people. You know that you can do this for literally any Twitter account, any of them. This is human terrain mapping, by the way. Then you can take those accounts. There are plenty of other tools that are out there. And Chris, I know you know all about them, where you get to find out things about people and where they're coming from. And that's literally what I was looking at. You know, predictably, a lot of these accounts are coming from two places, Northern Virginia, shocker, shocker. And the other one's Krakow, Poland, which, you know, might take a couple people for surprise. Us in here, it absolutely won't. People that have been paying attention, absolutely won't. Because this is a NATO operation. It's where their money is. So there's going to be a lot of sad pandas in November. I want to bring up something else related to the Ukraine stuff, because I'm going to make this prediction now. There's another piece to the human terrain mapping, the human relation mapping that goes into this. And that is who is at the center of each one of their webs. So basically you take a Venn diagram, and you have like, you know, multiple Venn diagrams of each person's Twitter circle. Where's that overlap? Where is that person of interest? It's always at the middle of it. Interestingly enough, there's one name that keeps popping up in there. And that's actually what I was looking for, was this person in particular. His name is Matthew Van Dyke. You need to look this guy up. He runs an NGO called Sons of Liberty International, interestingly enough. It's a 501c3. It's run out of Northern Virginia. He was in one of Gaddafi's prisons for a little while. Got rolled up as he was trying to emulate Che Guevara's motorcycle diaries, his ride across the Middle East, just in the middle of all the, you know, the Arab Spring and all these things. Interesting story. I've met some people, you know, in the course of my interesting career before I was publicly known, who had come across affiliates of his and people who were trainers. But that was before Ukraine. And then when Ukraine kicked off, there were a lot of international volunteers that went into Ukraine. Not as many now. But every one of these NAFO accounts are all a nebulous around this guy. You need to pay attention to him, because I'm telling you, in November, and he's been putting out a lot of propaganda over the years. I've followed that guy and people that are in his inner circle very closely.
He looks like a fucking serial killer.
Yeah. Well,
sorry, that was my outside voice.
There's a 1-to-1 correlation between him, his entourage, and Antifa. I'm telling you now, right now, they're going to bring that home in November. This guy is a dyed-in-the-wool Trump derangement syndrome, dude. He has been a facilitator, a trainer of fighters overseas. He's going to bring that home. I'm telling you right now, mark my words. And that guy, if he isn't an asset for one of the intelligence agencies, they missed a damn good opportunity. Yeah, there he is. There he is. There's old Matthew.
If you remember, he used to have, you and I talked about this in person with a bunch of people a couple weeks ago, I think. But he used to have a charity where they were allegedly raising money for their dogs to get armor for Sons of Liberty running checkpoints up in Kurdistan. And I saw some of them dogs and none of them ever had armor. So you can draw your own conclusion as to what they do with that money.
He got a master's degree in international studies at Georgetown. You tell me how the fuck he got there. I mean, you know, all of us that are familiar with what goes on at Georgetown, what they groom them for, you know. It's just plain and simple. But that guy, you know,
this the thing just, is that got when, agency when, written all over him, bro.
Well, remember too that these guys who say it, like he just put on Twitter there, I enlisted in the Ukrainian army. That has some citizenship implications that you need to pay attention to, especially if you were at the SNCO or higher level. So,
well, it's the point that I'm making though is that with Ukraine winding down, which it will, that's going to come home, and these same people who are facilitating that are going to facilitate the counter activities that are going to happen when Trump comes back into office, should he live that long. And, you know, either way, they're coming back. And that window of their viability as fighters is actually closing, and it's closing quick. Typically, you know, once you get too far removed from a cause in terms of a timeline, the public support for it begins to wane. We've seen this over and over again. It's actually a pretty well-known radicalization model when we throw some sociology in there of radical groups and whatnot. The Patriot movement of the 1990s suffered from this and then almost completely vanished on 9/11 because the time from the incidents of Waco and Ruby Ridge, then Waco, then Oklahoma City, the proximity in terms of timeline walked too far away, and they didn't actually accomplish any goals. So it gave way to infighting and counterproductivity. Then when 9/11 rolled around, they nearly vanished completely, and you only had just small remnants of it. Then it came back, obviously, under the Obama administration, and it's had a life cycle. But that's a good example of this. So these guys have to do something, and I think they're just stupid enough to think that they will. And they have enough Confederates in the, you know, their allies and sympathizers that are in the halls of government that will give them support. So there you go.
And cover, more importantly. Yeah.
Right.
I think there's Chris, go ahead. I think.
Yeah. They're enjoying top cover that our side never had. And just to kind of double down on what Matt was saying, if Trump gets in, and I don't think they're done trying to remove him from the planet, but should he get in, you know, we're going to see the mostly peaceful summers that we saw during his first administration times 100, and we're going to see, I think, a level of professionalism in their endeavors that we didn't see last time. You know, you're going to see them being well-trained. And, you know, and I still see people on the right kind of scoffing and laughing at the left and, you know, calling them soy boys and basically disregarding the level of threat that they can bring to bear. And that's an absolute mistake. You know, it and I get the whole, you know, meme warfare thing. That's, you know, that's a thing. But the level of violence we're going to see is going to be epic. And not to mention all those foreign fighters. What are those foreign fighters doing?
Here's a question for you, Chris. How many of those guys do you think know what their mission is and how many don't?
Of the foreign fighters?
We're talking about, they brought in, Michael Young estimates, we figured it out when I, like, 30, 40 million military age males.
Yeah.
How many of them do you think have training? How many do you think know their mission? And, what, you know, percentage-wise, what percentage do you think knows their mission? And well, I'm asking you from what would you do? Because this is your domain, right?
Right, and you know, this is guesswork on my part, but I'd say you probably have 10% of that number that are actually seriously trained soldiers that have, in broad strokes, a mission statement. Okay, they may not have particulars, but they have, you know, a generalized mission statement And then you've got probably another 20%, 25% of guys that are soldiers, more or less, have had some level of training, and they're waiting for orders. They're waiting for someone to take charge of them. And those may seem like small percentages, but, you know, if you plug that into the numbers, those are scary numbers. Those are absolutely scary numbers.
Yeah.
I mean, I could do a lot with a lot less, you know, any one of us could. So,
well, here's another question for you. So I didn't catch this today because I didn't see the posts, which is my bad because I wasn't in Twitter. But Michael Yon was posting that it's a common tactic for the CIA to take small groups of insurgents and then go and blow up rail lines, go and blow up power stations, and then attack the repair crews, which is exactly what's going on in Houston right now. The repair crews or linemen are getting attacked. They're getting fed fentanyl-laced water. The bigger question I have here is this a dress rehearsal for the bigger game in your mind?
I certainly wouldn't write it off. I mean, just when I saw that story initially, I couldn't help but think of, you know, my time at Katrina. And, you know, there's some demographic issues there. There's some broader sociological aspects to that. But that certainly could be the case. I mean, you're going to see toes being stuck in the water, so to speak. And this could be an example of that. You know, it kind of taking atmospherics, small actions, and then you pull back and you wait and you see what kind of reaction you get. So I would expect to see more stuff like that. But that's kind of where my head goes.
Makes sense. Joe?
So going exactly to what Kay just pointed out, I want to tell everyone about a few incidents in Michigan that the media isn't telling you about. A lot of folks don't know is that Michigan is an Antifa stronghold, have an Antifa governor and an Antifa attorney general, quite literally. Two weeks ago, we had a young man arrested for breaking into a wastewater treatment plant. Drinking water treatment plant in Washtenaw County, Michigan. While the cops were there taking the report about the break-in, this guy just bebops out of the back and gets arrested. He attempted to shut it down, which would have caused a lot of problems, but he wasn't able to. After that, it started coming out that the Michigan State Police is seeking rewards for the information of whoever is shooting up power transformers in the Lansing area where the Capitol is. And in the last week, those attacks have now expanded into three more counties surrounding the Capitol, working its way outward, using rifle fire to strike transformers. They're hitting the wrong things instead of the right things, but they are attempting to do this. And I think that goes to a series of small things, right? Someone's trying to make something happen. If you remember the big power outage in 2002.
They might be stealing diesel. Are they hitting the actual transformers? Because there's 5 gallons of diesel in those transformers. And
they're just shooting them, trying to get them to overheat and causing the damage. But if you remember the big power outage in 2003 was caused by a cascade failure. Somebody took down one area, and it caused failures the rest of the way. It could very well be what someone is attempting to do. So that goes to that small things. And on your topic of these guys knowing what they need to do, a lot of them probably came here being told, hey, there's going to be a mission for you, but your staging area is Seattle. Your staging area is Denver. Your staging area is Washington, D.C. And these guys are now making their way across the border and to their staging area. Well, they'll get further information. I mean, absolutely. Compartmentalized, getting them in position.
I want to make sure I just heard you right. You're saying that they're moving to assemble areas right now in preparation for operations. That's significant because for those of you out there who don't know what I'm talking about, anytime you move forces into an area to conduct operations, you move them into what's called assembly areas. So they're moving on different routes as they're coming in, but they're all going to meet in one place. They're going to form up, and then they're going to go out and conduct operations. That's called an assembly area. And they, you do that, and you've heard me say that before. You don't marshal these kind of forces in one place without a mission and without a purpose, because if you don't give them a mission and a purpose, they go off the reservation and start doing stupid things. It's just how Joes work, right?
Yeah.
But what we're seeing, if you're correct, which I believe you are, then we're seeing highly disciplined troops, which is what Chris was talking about.
What indicates that this is the case is if you read H. John Poole's work over the last 5 years, he documents that there are two different rat lines that run from South America all the way up to the U.S. One is a series of Islamic-only towns full of Muslims, and it starts down in Argentina, and it works its way all the way up to the border. Same thing happens beginning in the tri-border area, Paraguay, Uruguay, and Argentina, and continues north of Chinese towns. Look at the demographic shift over the last 10 years in Mexicali, Mexico. You will be surprised at who lives in Mexicali, Mexico. It's not Mexicans, right? I won't say who they are, but they speak Chinese, so you can draw your own conclusions. But that's kind of the assembly area for making it across the border and then being dispersed out to other places. Absolutely think that's happening.
Hey, let me ask you guys a question. This and the troop, I'll let you talk thread on this because I know you've this is your domain. The what do you think the Chinese? So let's assume that the Chinese have several million. Let's say a conservative estimate is 5 million on the ground. What do you think their mission is?
I don't think the mission is takeover. I think it's a disruption. If you look at where they've been buying land and most likely therefore staging equipment, it's an attempt to disrupt our ability to control things. And if they are able to turn off the power, as an example, we would have civil unrest in a very large scale. Their mission isn't to take things over. It's to cause more unrest and to prevent us from regaining control. That's just my opinion. I don't have any proof of that, but that's what I'm thinking.
True.
I concur. I mean, their primary mission is to surveil and infiltrate, whether that's getting into systems or whether that's getting into government or policy or decision-making rooms or positions. And then at that point, is their mission to influence first, a soft influence? And then if we go tactical, that infiltration part is going to be leveraged for whatever systems that they have that they can compromise, which is also people assets that work for companies like AWS, Microsoft, Oracle, that, you know, Google, where they can also infiltrate and compromise all of these companies that have all gone to cloud before they even figured out what their native infrastructure was. So there's a lot more than just some random Chinese nation state hacker that's on the other end of a keyboard. These people are active employees in a lot of organizations that have a access to a lot of information. So infiltrate and then determine whether or not you need to influence or compromise.
Matt, I know you got some thoughts on this too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, when you look at the level of elite capture, just that alone that's occurred, this has actually allowed for the Chinese infiltration. This has happened in all 50 states, by the way. You know, here in North Carolina, right around Research Triangle Park. So you have, you know, obviously University of Chapel Hill, NC State University, and Duke University, which is, you know, the three of those colleges are premier schools for cutting edge developmental technology in the United States and in the world. All three of them are. As a matter of fact, the, you know, in 2015, as I'm sure as a lot of the audience knows, that's where the patent for COVID was actually filed. If you look at how many Chinese have come in as either undergrads or advanced degree students at the graduate level or the doctorate level, and they've come in, they come in on grants that are managed by Confucius societies, right? The Confucius societies, you'll find at every one of the land grant universities across the United States, you're going to find them there,
right? Every single
one of them. Our current governor, Cooper, we call him King Koopa. Little reference to Mario, you know, here in North Carolina, but King Koopa. He's actually really good political friends with the Confucius Society of Raleigh. You look into this. He goes to all their dinners. He helped facilitate, and when he was, if I remember correctly, when he was the Attorney General of North Carolina, he is the one who rubber stamped the sale of Smithfield Foods, which is the third largest producer of meat in the world, to the Chinese government.
That's peculiar. It's probably fine.
Probably fine.
It's probably fine.
But, you know, anybody in the audience wants to look into this. This is actually happening in all 50 states. There's a concerted aspect or a coordinated aspect to this. I want to share with something that to the audience that I've written about long ago. This was back in 2018, 2019. Would have been 2019. So the Morningstar Ranch in Del Rio, Texas, I did overlays of this and showed where they were putting in improved runways there, heavy lift runways specifically. Now, I'm not going to share exactly who it was that gave me this information, very, very detailed information. I will say that he is a contractor, a construction contractor in Texas, and a very big one. Who I was doing a private course for. And he shared all this with me, including the Chinese general who, you know, I'm speaking off the cuff, but the guy that bought the Morningstar Ranch and financed all these improvement projects there, including not one, but two heavy lift runways, is the general in charge of the People's Liberation Army logistics branch. And he's the guy that owns it or owned it. That may have changed. It could have changed hands since then. I haven't followed up on it, right? But this guy is a very, very big deal in the state of Texas, and that's why he was donating so much money to, you know, Republican causes to try and get these green energy initiatives canceled, because that was how they worked their way in. What this general was claiming and the Morningstar Ranch Corporation was formed to do in the state of Texas was create green energy, right? And specifically, they were building all these windmills. So they had this road put in that was going around the heavy lift runway that they were saying were going to be the sites for windmills. Well, the problem with that is there's no wind in Del Rio enough to generate any sort of power, and there was no external connection to any of the power grids there.
Again, what the heck are they doing? Probably fine. It's probably fine.
Yeah, it's probably fine. And he turned down the project and then in turn turned around and started ringing the alarm bells. Fortunately, you know, a lot of people are, especially in Texas, are not fans of Greg Abbott, nor should they be.
Because he's the cuck for the left.
Well, he is.
He's a cuck for the left.
I don't want to get into that, but my point is that he actually did respond to this, and in a very good way. And so a lot of the green energy initiative stuff got rolled back. And that was really the focal point that got a lot of the conversation started. And of course, you know, all of this has rolled very slowly, but here we are. So, you know, again, backing up all the points that have been made, the Chinese have had a very long-term plan here in the United States. It's going on in all 50 states. The elite capture is here. It is in everybody's face.
Do you think the elite capture, do you think that's just strictly, I'll just say it. Between APAC and the Chinese, you're right, it's 100% capture of all of our elected officials, all the way down to the city level, without exception. And they've done that through either coercion, through bribery, or through compromise with a variety of different attack surfaces to do it. That said, even if let's play devil's advocate, because even if we are able to throw them out of our country, even if we're able to stop the flow of and the influx of foreigners into the country. That's not going to take, it's not going to do anything about our borders or any of the nations around our border, meaning they're going to be in Canada. They're going to be in Mexico. They're going to be in South America. They're going to be across mm-hmm. the Pacific. They're going to be in Europe. So this to me is not just a fight here on our soil. The close fight is here. The long fight is in all the countries around us to throw them out. And I mean, you have to ask the question. The question is, what are we in the fight for? Are we in the fight just to restore our constitution? Are we in the fight to liberate the planet? Because I don't think anybody wants to live under communist rule. I mean, they're finding out that the hard way in Africa right now, in Zaire and in Uganda and a few other places where the Chinese have come in and set up Chinese autonomous zones. Those people are being treated like dog shit right now. And they're starting to figure out that all the promises that come with the Belt and Road Initiative are not exactly what they thought they were going to be. And, you know,
it's payday loans. The Chinese are the international payday loans brokers.
It's a true statement, right?
That's actually a pretty solid analogy.
Fuck yeah, dude. I'm going to shamelessly steal that and call it my own. That's for sure.
They went into Ghana and said, hey, we'll pay your national debt. In exchange, you're going to give us all of your national infrastructure, your airports. They only have two of them, I think.
They did the same thing on Johnson Atoll. Exact same thing.
Yeah.
We'll come in and fix your airport, okay, but then you're our bitch.
We're going to steal your railroad. So now we own your railroad. We own your airport. We own your roads, literally your roads. We, the Chinese own them now. You don't have anything. Why do you think, by the way, this is going down a little rabbit hole here, but you know, anybody can check all this out. Why is it that a few years back, this would have been either the very beginning of COVID or just prior to it? Why do you think that there was a Chinese scientist doing a presentation at their version of the TED Talks who had admitted that they were gene editing babies to be AIDS resistant? He disappeared right after that, by the way. He disappeared. He vanished, fell right off the face of the earth. Him and Feng Feng went to go live out the rest of their days, right, in Western China. She died, by the way, in a plane crash, in case anybody was wondering.
She got smoked, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, her plane had an unfortunate cornfield stop en route to her destination.
They didn't know it was in the side of a mountain. They didn't know who else died on that aircraft because they couldn't get to it for days. But they were sure she was on it. It's like, ooh.
That's awesome. That's the Chinese right there. Hey, I want to respond to some things in the chat here real quick. So, Sardinal, that the threat to water was a big, and SCADA systems was a big thing back in the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s. All the way through, I'll say 2012 and 13, and when they started dismantling FEMA, it was a big deal. I remember doing that training as well. And then surfing the universe, you're right. They're entrenched in their waiting for orders. Agree with that. And I think Chris is right. I think Joe's right. They're going to go after military complexes and military infrastructure. And I think the cartels will be used. And Triple talked to this in just a minute because he's jumping at the bit to correct me right now. The cartels will be used to go after first responders and create chaos in the cities with Antifa. So we're going to see a bunch of different things going on all at the same time. I want to do a shout out real quick since we're coming up on 20 in the hour here. I want to give a shout out to some folks who donated to Trooper Care Network and say thank you. So first one is Brendan and Kathy. Thanks for the donation and thanks for the kind words. The next one is Patricia and Edward. Thanks for the gifts from Amazon. And then Stuart. Stuart is thanks, brother. Appreciate that. And haven't forgot about your buffer, bud. That's coming. So still trying to source one. And then last but not least is Robert. Man, I don't have words. Robert dropped a pretty significant donation to Trooper Care. So I appreciate you guys actually taking action on my recommendation. And for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, I've been fighting with Stripe because of the Substack, and Stripe wants a bunch of information about my company. And then they were telling me that my company doesn't qualify and they're going to hold all the payments. It's just a big ruse so they can hold the payments. So I turned off subscriptions. I turned off donations for the Substack that was going to Troop and just said, donate directly to Trooper Care Network. Cause he, if you don't know what goes on, Troop goes out every Saturday and he helps the homeless, and he does literally wound care. He does heat exhaustion. He deals with all kinds of different injuries, and he's doing it out of the goodness of their heart. It costs about between $500 and $1,000 a weekend to go do it. It gets very pricey very quickly. So over the last year, a number of us convinced him to do a 503C, and now it's 503C. And he relies on your donations to be able to get the supplies to go out there on the different times of year and help the homeless. And it's really a worthwhile thing. I couldn't do it. I'm telling you, I couldn't do it because I guess the best way to say it is I get mad because I can't help people. You know, you're helping people, you know, we're spiraling out of control. So, yeah, I'll let you talk more, Troop, because I'm not doing you any justice right now.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So I want everybody to first realize that these are homeless Americans, and if there was a non-American that walked up on my station, I don't differentiate. I think that those demographics are going to change significantly. Whoever takes the White House, notice I didn't say fairly wins the election, but whatever happens next, the money is going to stop, and it's going to significantly change the dynamics out there at the homeless camps. But I just wanted to remind everybody that there's not a homeless problem. The only people that have a homeless problem are homeless people. And I work directly with city council members and mayors and state legislators and everybody else. And, you know, their version of solving the problem is to push the problem outside of their city limits into the next city. And then they do that. But I want everybody to think for a minute. There's children that are born that have permanent lifetime intellectual and physical disabilities. And a lot of those children go to foster care and become wards of the state. We don't kill our own. I mean, as a society, we have to take care of those who are weaker than us. Sometimes that weakness is self-inflicted, but surprisingly in the homeless population, a lot of it isn't self-inflicted. A lot of it is just very dramatic, sudden, and unfortunate circumstances happen to people. You have elderly people that are infirm. They didn't plan for retirement. Their family aren't taking care of them. You just have these situations in the world, and a segment of that population is always going to be homeless people. You're not going to fix the homeless problem. You can address the root causes of the homeless problem in many different ways. And I think it's ironic that the same politicians and legislators who are, you know, trying to solve the homeless problem are responsible for most of the policies that have created the homeless problem. So that being said, I want everybody to reflect on their compassion. I don't know how I ended up out there, but I realize that that's like my Alamo now. And so I do appreciate the immense amount of support that you all have given to me. I posted the troopercarenetwork.com website there. Don't want you to donate. I don't want you to go outside of your means. I don't want you to be guilt-driven to do anything. But what I do want you to do is just think about that, and think about that as you're driving, you know, through your daily life, to just carry that compassion with you. And then also on the Trooper channel, and some of these I'll post to Colonel Murray's channel on Telegram, but mostly to the Trooper channel, is we use the donations that you give us, and we talk through how we're treating these various wounds. And we've treated stab wounds, gunshot wounds, open venous ulcers, severe second and third degree burns, broken bones, vehicle pedestrian collisions, you name it. We've done it. We've administered Narcan. We've gone through the whole gamut of everything that you're going to see when the lights go out. Everything that a normal person and a normal family and a normal community are going to experience when shit hits the fan is what goes on in those homeless camps every day. So it's an important mission for me personally, but for everybody, I want you to consider it as a learning opportunity to go, wow, you know, this, you can really get scabies, you can get stung by scorpions, you can get, you know, bed bugs, you can get extreme heat dehydration and sunburn, you can get stabbed. So all these things happen, and we go through a lot of pretty complex wound care, the way we apply different types of dressings to different types of wounds. And that is what you can learn if you just watch. You don't have to donate anything, but you're going to go, oh, I see, this is why they have calcium alginate dressings. This is what, you know, silver gels use for. This is whatever. So it's a learning experience. If any of you are considering increasing your capability to be prepared, you should all be, you know, CPR, heart saver level, immediate, you know, airway breathing, bleeding, circulation, exposure. Those are most of the things that everybody on this roundtable are trained on. And what we're doing is a lot of acute and chronic wound care that's, you know, below surgery. We're not a clinic, but there's a lot to be learned out there. But thank you, Steve, for giving me a little bit of time on that. And thank you for everybody that's donating and supporting. Like, everything that you put into that, we're putting into the mission. I don't draw a salary. If I was going to hire anybody, it would be hire somebody who knows how to do all the paperwork that's associated with taxes and insurance and 501c and all that. Like, I would hire, like, you know, that person. But I don't draw a salary. Every penny that is donated and every Band-Aid that's donated, we're using on, you know, on the mission. So thank you for that. And thanks, Steve.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I want to say thanks to Timberly for helping you get your 503C.
So definitely.
That was a huge effort to get that done. So, and why we're bringing it up tonight is that Troop and I have been talking for the last couple of weeks, and I never give a shout out to folks that have donated. And it was something we both wanted to do, because what he's doing is important, and there's a lot of people supporting it that, you know, need to, they deserve some credit for it. So again, can't say thanks enough. I want to transition to the Trump situation and get your thoughts on what comes next for Trump and who are they going to go after next. And I'm going to start with you, Chris, because, you know, again, this is your domain.
If I
you know,
can
installing, you know, puppet governments and conducting coups and things like that, I'm assuming that's yours, your expertise.
I don't know what you're talking about. Before we dive into that, I just want to tap on something I've seen in the comments, kind of regarding the Chinese situation. Somebody pointed out you are taking note of the illegals in your area. Something I've been seeing on the West Coast quite a bit, and I'm sure it's happening elsewhere, is legitimate or semi-legitimate, I'll call businesses that are being run by Chinese nationals. And I did some of my own reconnaissance work in my AO and found military trained Chinese foreigners running grow operations in some Western states. And what's interesting about this is we got some of the locals to contact law enforcement and see if some, you know, basically drop a dime on them, and they wouldn't do anything. So there is a level of top cover being provided for this illicit activity. So, I mean, if you just look at that little piece of it, that there's a lot to unpack there. But it's given these guys something to do while they're in their assembly area, so to speak. They're making money. They're facilitating, you know, bringing more people into their AOs, making sure they're outfitted. And they're doing their own reconnaissance. So what I would challenge the viewers to do is, you know, everybody's always asking me, hey, you know, when do I strap the armor on? When do I get the gun out? It, you know, the stuff we need to be doing right now is in the intelligence space. And it's not hard to do. You simply go out and you observe. You notice things and you follow up on it. And you start making notes and you start compiling information, you know, you start building a dossier like I just described in my area. I'm seeing the stuff. I'm annotating all this. I'm looking at when they're coming, when they're going, how many I'm seeing, what are they speaking? What are they carrying? What's their demeanor like? So stuff like that is really, really useful.
Well, that's going to be my other question to you. So you might as well, when I give it back to you, you might as well answer that too. How many do you think are going to go native and not follow through with their mission. Meaning how many Chinese have come over here to get out of China and don't plan on ever going back and are only loosely loyal to the CCP. Just swag it, because
I don't think too many are going to be able to defect and blend if they were selected to come over here. They already had leverage on them at home. So until those relatives die off, I don't think they're going to do anything to put them in jeopardy. But I do see a big desire to do that.
Yeah, and that's kind of a traditional Chinese way, right? It'd be a shame if something happened to grandma if you don't do what we need.
This is a lot like the mob, doesn't it?
It does.
It's come to my attention you failed to pay the restitution of several of my associates. Therefore, we will hold your family as barter material until you provide the necessary funds to clear your debt. Sound familiar?
Yep. Yeah, and this also brings up the fact that we're seeing Chinese police operations, overt police operations in Western countries now. You know, it popped up in New York, and then there was kind of an outcry about it. But we're seeing it in Europe now. I think Poland was the last one.
Turkey, Poland. There was another one. I don't remember. Definitely, they're opening up shop.
Yeah.
Well, what's interesting to me about this, so, and I want you to get back to what you're talking about with them opening legitimate businesses or buying legitimate businesses and then employing folks coming over, because I've seen that too, right? I've seen that. Case in point, I had the incident at Costco a few months back where a bunch of Chinese guys were following me around. They were following me. They knew who I was. They were clearly following me. And I confronted them and exchanged some words, and then they left the store. But they were clearly walking in the store watching me. And this the Costco that I was at, there's not a lot of Asians there, and now the place is crawling with Asians every time I go in there. So you're right, they're infiltrating every community, and they all have money in their pockets, so they're obviously getting it from somewhere, probably our own government as part of it. But I'm seeing that more and more too. The other thing I'm seeing is they're moving in pickups, a lot of pickups with military age males all riding together, all wearing the same kind of clothing. It's stuff like that that's unusual, and I'm seeing it more and more. So that stands to reason. I think the question that's probably burning in everybody's head right now is how far away from go time are we?
I think it depends on what happens with Trump in the election. I mean, that's the elephant in the room.
Or what happens to Trump before the election, because they already played their cards out, they missed, and they're out of options.
So, they're only going to get more desperate from here. They're not going to all of a sudden be like, oh, I guess we tried. Let's move on.
No, they're getting reckless and undisciplined. This is when they start getting undisciplined.
Well, I ask that because that's a question I get a lot, right? But my read of the situation, and I said this in my sit rep, this is a win-win for them, right? Whether they miss, whether they don't miss, win-win, because it had the desired effects. First of all, the public's even more divided. Anybody that's on the left thinks it was a hoax conducted by Trump. Anybody on the right thinks it was an event that was conducted by the regime to take out Trump. And no matter which way it goes, the battle lines have already been drawn. Anybody that's never Trumper is not coming off of that. Anybody that's an always Trumper is never coming off of that. And the folks in the middle, they're going to vote for Trump just because they hate what Biden's done to the country, and they're looking at their cost of living. With the exception of California, Idaho, or California, Oregon, and Washington, they're all fucking retarded. They're not going to be less retarded. Liberals are stupid without exception. And if that hurts your feelings, fuck you. I don't care. You're fucking retarded. But with the exception of those three states, okay, maybe Massachusetts. But the point is that they've drawn the battle lines. And no matter what happens now, no one will accept the election. So they could kill both Biden and they could kill Trump. And probably they'll start with Trump's family next. Probably Barron is the one they'll go after. And then they'll take Trump out. and they don't care anymore, right? It's all about fear and intimidation. And the moment they take Trump out, civil war. So they get what they want no matter what they do. They don't have to be careful anymore. They've been outed, right? So they can do whatever the fuck they want to do, because after that, it's all going to be fear and intimidation, right? So they'll start rolling people up. They'll start sending out kill squads. And who's to say they're not doing it already? At least that's how I see them playing it out. I don't see them as desperate. I see them as strategic. And I see this play was, if it goes great, we got the messaging. If it doesn't go great, we got the messaging. Because the messaging after the initial event was disjointed, which tells me that they planned on, and if you look at the angles and you look at the way that the people were seated, they were planning on blowing his fucking head off on national TV. They were planning on it. And then when it didn't happen, they didn't have the messages ready for the failure, because not even 24 hours later, they started flooding the system with garbage information. Because as we were talking about it on Saturday, you guys are pointing out a lot of different things that didn't add up. And all of us realized, we all knew, let me just go back. All of us knew from the very first second that whoever was on that roof was a patsy. All of us fucking knew that, because it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that out. What we were trying to process through is to give the public and to give the, you know, the non-military types the information to see, this is why we say, this is what we, you know, this is why we come to this conclusion, right? So it was a good exercise for that. But one thing we didn't talk about was the shot coming from outside the perimeter. We didn't talk about that, because all of us were looking at all the things they did wrong and not at the possibility that they put somebody outside the perimeter that was supposed to hit Trump and they missed because of divine intervention. And you ask me, that was divine intervention, because the second shooter that came out today, the video of the second shooter on the right side, I mean, blind dumb luck. So I don't think that this is desperation. I think this is truly planned. I think they've war gamed this out to where either scenario, they can leverage either scenario to get their objectives met. It's just, at what point does it fall apart is the way I see it. I mean, you guys think I'm high on that, or because that's how I see it.
I'm looking at all this morass of detail and this JFK type of second shooter and all this other fucking bullshit. The only thing that matters to me is some fucking 20-year-old that would run from his own shadow did not suddenly come up with the intestinal fortitude and the knowledge and wherewithal to figure out how to penetrate an environment, walk freely and openly under the beat of at least two sniper teams, and set up a fucking shot all on his own. That is fucking bullshit. And the way it looks to me is they saw Trump go down and then they killed their patsy and then they hosed off the DNA the next day. So they when Trump got back up, they went, oh, fuck, okay. But, I mean, when he went down, it looked like he went down. So I think the kid was manipulated. He was wound up. He was activated. He was patsied, and then they didn't work out the way they wanted it to. It doesn't matter what all the other conditions and factors and angles and all this fucking bullshit is. Eric Prince said something about it. It was a windage error. That's fucking bullshit. I mean, at 130 yards windage on an AR-15 to something the size of Trump's head, I don't think windage was an issue. I think the kid flinched. And then he just started, rapid firing, because a 22-year-old SSRI wind-up doll is not going to be able to endure that level of stress for very long. And so it doesn't matter what happened. The only thing that does matter is he took the shot, Trump went down, they turned him off, and that was their playbook. Now whether they were, and then the DOJ and the FBI is like, so, we got to switch the message now. And the MAGA domestic violent extremists are going to be really pissed off. You got to watch out for them. They're trying to, fuck you guys.
The latest narrative they moved to is Iran, that Iranian, it was a special forces. I can't remember what it was. Iranian something. Iranian units are operating here and trying to take out Trump. So they're already trying to blame it on Iran so they can
wipe. They would have fucking droned him. I mean, that's the thing with being outside. We see how fast these hyper fast movers can go. And I mean, they could deploy 300 of them and just aim them in the general direction of the podium. And, boop, 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 boop. They could kill everybody in that, in the bleachers.
Yeah. Yeah. But I fall and I'll let you guys chime in on this. I fall back to this, this is the thing that sticks in my craw about the whole thing. They wanted this on TV. They moved CNN. They stopped a live feed to move to Trump moments before he was shot. Somebody made a comment about the long short or the shorts on the True Social stock that was done on Friday. That was all over the news today. They wanted this on TV. They wanted the world to see this guy. They wanted to see Trump getting his head blown off. They were going to replay that with his fucking brains all over the stage for the entire world to see. They wanted him to be shot on TV. Planned it, executed it, and wanted it. That says to me that they don't care about the consequences because they've already factored in that it would be civil war. And I guarantee you, if they would achieve that, politicians would be disappearing right now. Because people would go off the reservation. They will go off the reservation if they smoke Trump. I should say when they smoke Trump. Because at this point, I think it's a foregone conclusion. I don't know. You guys think, I know you guys got opinions on this. I could talk on this all day about just how bitter I am about this situation.
Well, I would say, first off, Eric Prince is not wrong. Windage could certainly be a factor. If that was a 5.56 and it's looking like it was, and looking at the gusts that were there that day, yeah, definitely could have been a factor. But we got to focus on the stuff we actually do know, because the narrative keeps shifting. Even from reliable sources that I have in the community, I'm getting garbage. I'm getting stuff that's turning out to be wrong the next day. So it's getting pretty frustrating. So if we just pull back, we can look at A, we do know that his detail asked to be plussed up because they did not have the manpower that they needed to have for the venues that they were taking him to. Okay. They were denied. They were denied repeatedly again and again and again. So that is a fact. Second, that day, for some reason, they pulled his normal detail off to go plus up Jill Biden's detail. Okay. So again, that's another factor. And then we look at how they decided to set up their screens, their anti-sniper screens, and construct their perimeter. And this could feed back to point A being a manning issue. It was not adequate and it was not normal. And then third point, it is, I've done EP work before. I'm not Secret Service, but there's some like universal stuff out there in the executive protection world. All right. If there is any cause for concern, if any call comes over the radio that something is suspect, something is amiss, you surround your primary and you move them out of the area. And we've seen this play out before. We've seen this play out before with other politicians, with other dignitaries. Okay. And it turned out to be nothing, but that is what they do. And, you know, people can argue about, oh, their rules of engagements, you know, blah, blah, blah for the counter sniper. It's who cares what those agents glued to him should have done is surrounded him and swept him away. And we know those calls were going out. We had what, 26 minutes of people notifying police. We had police that engaged with him on some level. You can't tell me. I know they had a shared net that the Secret Service didn't know. So without getting into ballistics or fucking second shooters or anything out there, you know, that's going on, we can see that this is nefarious already. All right. If we just go with the basic facts we have, and the last one I'll bring up, and Stephen, you already brought it up, the fact that MSNBC, CNN, the left that never covers him live were there covering him live.
That's the biggest indicator. Yeah.
That's huge. That's absolutely huge.
I'm going to back up what you just said about Eric Prince's comments. Having done an advance or two in my day, this is either gross incompetence on the advance team to fail to identify this or malfeasance. I will guarantee you there's not gross incompetence at that level in the Secret Service to get on a detail of that level. So that only leaves one option. So.
So, the glaring irregularities that have already been pointed out, there's one that I'm going to throw into this. Well, two. And I had pulled them up on Twitter. But the first one, before I pull that one up, the first one is that, you know, the blame's getting shuffled around. They said that there was a communications breakdown between teams, the counter sniper teams. That's not possible. Okay. Anybody that says that that was the cause of the delay in acquiring the target that was 130 meters away. No, wasn't a communications breakdown. The statement backing that, in support of that, saying that there was a counter sniper team that was supposed to be on that rooftop, but had been pulled off or went down below, right, of the first floor of that building. That's also not possible for the team that returned fire to not know that. That is absolutely 100% no, did not happen. Because this is the way this works when you have a SNOT element or sniper observer team. It doesn't matter. Having done this a lot overseas, I'm telling you, this is how this works. When you have your sniper observer teams, they're assigned sectors. So, like, if we're surveilling a building, you know, white side is the side that your entry team, your ground guys are going to go in. So your assault element's going in. Then you have green side, you have red side, black side is what you cannot see around the back generally. And that's where you're going to have some other support, an ISR drone or whatever is going to be watching that. And then you'll have follow-on forces to roll up the squirters, the people who are going to leave out of there, right? This is observation of a target 101, right? I find it extremely hard to believe that we were in the GWAT for 22 years, 23 years, and we have a mountain of experience prior to that on doing this, and they all of a sudden forgot all of it? Because you don't leave your posting once you're there, and when you do, it is notified, hey, everybody, Johnny's got to go take a piss or whatever. He's getting up, and there is visual confirmation. And that is echoed to every position that they acknowledge. All right, I have visual on the guy. I see him getting up. That security position is pulling off of the objective right now. Okay, so who's replacing him? So that story holds absolutely no water to me whatsoever. And that's not even gross negligence at this point. This is just fucking stupid. On his face. That is not how that went down. And it's even worse for them to say that they had a team on the first floor of the building this kid went up. I mean, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me right now? This is absolutely, why did you not have an agent standing there by every point of entry? This is just, again, when you're doing the, so I broke this down on my podcast on Radio Contra, but the quick and dirty on this is that you have your inner cordon and that's what everybody thinks of, you know, the guys that are going to dive on the principal, right. And they're coordinated with the extraction team. But before any that's, you see those guys when the shit is really went south, right. Everything else, you have your plainclothes guys that are going to be working the crowd. They're positioned in the crowd. Right, to kind of converge the net. Then you have guys who are overt, but they're static sight. And usually these are your junior post guys on the team. They're going to be static in positions, key positions of entry and exit, right? And this is where they're going to be. And they do not move. They do not deviate from that. And when you have, so say, for example, like it was brought up, these are facts. They pulled some manpower off of it, right? Off of the detail. Okay. So you supplement that with local law enforcement. You're going to have those guys. So you buddy them up and you position them where they're going to be and they don't deviate from this. I mean, again, I find it so very, very hard to believe that all of this we can just chalk up to, well, they fucked up. Oh, well. Like, nah, man. No, not at all. Not at all. There is absolutely no way for this. So, you know, in a nutshell, there's a lot of inconsistencies. You know, some people toss around like the multiple shooters theory. I don't prescribe to that. It was too short. It was too close of a shot. If there were multiple shooters, even from that water tower, I think that water tower was like 300 meters and some change away. That's still, if you had had multiple shooters, that wouldn't have, that wouldn't have been a thing, right? He wouldn't have survived it. So this, no. The cave was definitely a lone shooter, but going back to my point about shuffling the blame, the other thing that I was going to say, and there's a piece that's getting tossed around on Twitter. Of course, it's one of those, you know, believe it, take everything at face value type accounts that, you know, they just engagement farm and whatever. And I'm not going to name the account, but it is what it is. But it says that the Butler Township Commissioner, I'm reading this verbatim, the Butler Township Commissioner in PA says the Secret Service Director is lying, that the building the shooter was on was the responsibility for the local PD. And, you know, I already knew that. And anybody who's ever done any of these things knows that as well. But nah, you wouldn't assign the local police department to that building in that close of a proximity to the former president of the United States. That's just not going to happen. But the local Butler Township Police's only duties assigned to them were strictly traffic detail. They were not detailed to any security detail related to the event. And so there's some other statements that have come out of this that apparently the mayor of this town and PA is putting out. But I want to throw one more thing out. Being familiar, I've had a lot of students in class that are law enforcement that come in, and I've had several that are PA state troopers. And it just interestingly enough, I get a lot of people coming to class from Pennsylvania. I get a lot of people coming to class from Ohio. And, you know, law enforcement from both states, I can speak highly of them from the students that I've had. If they function anything like the North Carolina State Highway Patrol, because we don't have a state police force in North Carolina, we have the State Highway Patrol, we have the State Bureau of Investigation, both of which have protection team details, by the way. And I mean, I've worked with these guys in a past life, so I know quite a bit about how they function. Whenever you have, like, Kamala Harris, for example, you know, the VP was here in North Carolina. They're campaigning hard here in North Carolina. So she was just here in Greensboro the other day. And North Carolina State Highway Patrol is doing – they're supplementing the manpower in different layers, like different perimeters. And you know, you have your diameter of circles. Well, they supplement that manpower, and they have their own protection detail guys that are assigned to the governor and the lieutenant governor and dignitaries from the state of North Carolina. Well, what does this have to do with PA? Because we have to say, all right, they all function the exact same way, right? This is not new. None of this stuff is rocket science, and it's all established practice. Where was the PA state guys? And this is coming from the same state, by the way, that had a bunch of irregularities in the election. They probably will again. The state police commissioner is grossly incompetent. Remember the illegal they were trying to chase around in the woods and couldn't find and got out of their custody? And that guy never got fired. He's a state police commissioner of PA. Where were they? Has there been any sort of statement that they've put out? Because I haven't seen anything. What role were they playing?
I want to piggyback on that, because at the press conference on Saturday night, the first one ran by the FBI, the director of state police was on there, and the intelligence director, special ops director, a lieutenant colonel from Pennsylvania State Police was on there. He did something linguistically that, as an interrogator, I found odd. He never said the word Trump. He said the former president. That's an indicator to me of his leanings and how exactly how objective he's going to be in this investigation. In fact, at one point, he even said there were three victims and the former president. That tells me that he doesn't include the former president as a victim in this shooting.
No, because he's a liberal communist shitbag.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
Right.
That was my outside voice, wasn't it? Yeah. So I want to add a couple of things of context to this because, there's so much garbage information that's pushed out. Like it's hard to know if the short stock conversation is real, right? If that's just garbage information, because you were right, Chris, when you started talking that they've changed the narrative and flooded the system with all these false narratives since Saturday. That's why I said initially, that you have to wait 48 hours to see how they develop and what they report and how they report it, because it's a big tell on whether this was planned or it's a hoax. This is legitimately an attempt on Trump's life that was, foiled by divine intervention. And now they're doing damage control. But I would say that I still contend that they planned for both contingencies because their actions show that. And this isn't just damage control, because Victoria Nuland coming out saying that Trump's not going to be president, and I think that was 3 weeks ago she said that, somewhere around June 6th or June 7th. I mean, that's a big tell. They did the same thing with Nord Stream. They did the same thing with a few other events, but Nord Stream was the biggest one where they said, that's just not going to exist. We're not going to allow it to exist. And then guess what? They blew it up. So that to me says the regime was clearly behind this. Mayorkas gave the stand down order, and now they're telling the Secret Service director, if you say anything, you're done. At least her excuses bear that out. So there's a number of pieces to this that add up to that. The timing that I see coming, and I'm not sure I agree with Chris, because I think Troop was onto something when he, I'm trying to think, maybe it was the 12th we did it. Well, you said that it was back in May. Mid-July, the hottest point of summer, is the best time to conduct operations, because if you take power offline for 2 or 3 days, then the ability to store food is harder because people lose power and they lose their food in their storage, et cetera, et cetera. And I still think there's something in the near fight that's going to be even more significant than what we saw on the 13th. I don't think it's going to involve Trump. I think it's going to be a bigger event, but I think that's next on the horizon. And I think by mid-August, at the hottest point in the summer, is when we'll see the power outages and the infrastructure attacks. Just because I'm just going off of what Troop was saying, because they have the perfect opportunity right now to escalate with the Iranian narrative and then escalate and do something with Act 4 of the Biden removal. So I don't know, like, call me crazy, but I see something outside of Trump happening, and then they go after Trump in September, October, once this is the waters have smoothed out over this.
It's easy to manipulate people when you take things away from them. So if you take away, like you said, their stored food, their air conditioning, their water, their ability to freely travel on roadways, it's a lot easier to do what we used to do that was a good public service, which is take over gymnasiums and set up mass care centers and set up communication centers and patch all these different organizations together so they can help solve problems. I haven't really seen that apparatus functioning the last few years. It seems like we're completely incapable of responding to local and regional emergencies at this point. I mean, look at Lahaina, look at East Palestine. I mean, there's a number of other ones, but it's not... There also isn't a volunteer ethos anymore among the public. For those of you that go to church, you notice it's usually like the old people that do all the work. And there's a couple of, there's like two or three people out of the congregation that have kids that do all the work, but it's, you know, it's the retired people that do everything. The retired people aren't serving in the Red Cross local chapters anymore. The Salvation Army, the state EOCs, they've been federalized. They have a different protocol now. They aren't reaching out to local organizations. The local sheriff's offices aren't. They don't have the posse or the. They have different names for it. The community policing branch or whatever, volunteer search and rescue, the medical groups, all that other stuff. They're boiling it down where it used to be a very collaborative integration between the civilians and the civilian law enforcement. And this whole ethos of separating and driving a wedge between that. And I think a lot of the mistrust in law enforcement is playing right into the leftist's playbook, is you have that abstraction and now you have exclusion and you have control. So you have the controllers and you have the people that need to be controlled. So you throw in one huge event and you have the authoritarian apparatus in place. You don't have anybody that's really connected in a lot of counties anymore. And you have the ability to help augment those controls as you need them and when you need them.
Yep, wholeheartedly agree. And Phoenix Electra Circus, what a great name, brought up a good point that if power goes out to hospitals or clinics, now most of the hospitals have standby power for, I think, 3 days, but clinics, a lot of clinics don't, and neither do pharmacies. And almost all of the scripts now, almost all the medication is sent via electronic prescription to the pharmacy of your choice, and it's done
just in time,
automatically. Yeah, that's a damn good point, because the second and third order effects of a power outage is not just the food, but it's also the medical system too, right? And if you keep it down long enough, then you lose everybody that's in ICU, you lose everybody that's in critical care, probably a lot of people in palliative care, because without heat, without some of the drugs to ease their situation, a lot of people succumb to that too. So that's a damn good point. I don't know. I just, the reason why I don't think they're going to wait until October, November to do the kinetic stuff is for one reason. And that is they have to have the country in a place of chaos so they could use the contingency of not having an election. I just don't see us having an election. I know that Martin Armstrong disagrees and Socrates has been super right, but in this case, I think the fucking wheels are going to come off. They're already starting to come off. I mean,
they tried shooting a guy. I mean, what's their other option? We're just not going to do an election. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Well, they see him as a virus. It isn't. I mean, there are second and third order effects, but I think their priority is, if you take out Trump, there is no succession. There's no lieutenant. There's no number two. You know, it's not like Siegfried and Roy or Diamonds and Silk or whatever. Like, you know, there isn't another co-star. I mean, the Democrats have the same problem, right? But if you take out Trump, you're going to completely just cut the sails on the MAGA ship, and then they're just going to be fluttering adrift. And that's partially because we've iconified Trump to this level of messiah. And I mean, we get, you know, everybody on this call, that we're doers, we're communicating, we're leading, we're organizing, we're training, we're doing the best we can to inspire people to become active participants in their own communities. And unfortunately, 90% of the people are just followers, and Trump looks really good at, you know, his rallies and on TV, and they're like, well, we'll just follow this guy. Oh, that guy died. And so they don't really care what the consequences are of that. They've been trying to push this domestic violence extremist agenda anyway. So you take out Trump, there's going to be a couple of yahoos are going to go off the reservation, but they have effectively neutered this movement, and they will do whatever it takes. They will shoot him in the fucking street on live television if they have to. So,
well, I think they wanted to do that on Saturday because you're right. He's a virus, right? I mean, he's a good father. He's a good businessman. He actually has a belief system, takes care of his family, takes care of his employees. What an asshole. My God. Such an asshole, because he exemplifies all of the American, you know, the American ethos. What an asshole. I absolutely think that they were trying to kill him on national TV, and I don't think that's going to stop here. but I think they are going to wait and let the waters cool or level out before they do something else. Or they could just go, you know, they could go full tilt, but it's only July and we still have 2 months until they start ramping up. And I think in the next 2 months we'll see a ramp. So I just can't help but think that they're going to try and do something that will negate the need for an election or give them the ability to declare that there's not going to be an election or delay.
I'll agree that chaos is in the cards because that's going to work 100%.
Fucking A, well,
yeah. And, you know, if you look at your three main primers for chaos, and this is in a very, very fragile Western country like the U.S., you've got the economy, you've got infrastructure, and then you've got war. Well, shit, we're primed for all three already. Our infrastructure is borderline. It's failing in multiple ways across the board. We've already got war happening. I mean, Lavrov had some pretty choice words for us yesterday.
I didn't see him. What did he say?
He pointedly said the U.S. mistakenly thinks, and I'm paraphrasing, the U.S. mistakenly thinks that this is going to be a conflict in Europe, or Europe's going to take the brunt of this. And he's like, you're wrong. The U.S. is going to get hit on your homeland. This war will be on U.S. soil.
You know what he's saying? They're going to conduct an attack. That's exactly what he's saying.
The only defense organization that has taken that risk seriously is the Marine Corps. They ran ground defense drills, I think 3 months ago, at all of their bases. They had the military police and the FAST teams out and actually running ground defense drills. And when reporters asked why, the commandant was like, hey, we used to think that Fortress USA was safe. That's not going to be the case in the coming war. Fuck and 100% right. 100% right.
Yeah, I agree with that, Chris. I agree. You guys are spot on. I agree with that. I mean, it's going to be it's going to be probably, you know, 24 hours of people just taking in the shock of the actual escalation.
So I want to throw a little more into this. All right. So the Guardian, UK Guardian, and Daily Mail, both out of United Kingdom. All right. They're making a big deal all of a sudden about Chinese intelligence operations and Chinese bases being built in Cuba. I was reporting on that in 2018, did overlays of it, Lorde Signals Intelligence Station. And exactly what's going on there. They're building an LSA or logistics support area. It's got a giant heavy lift runway on it that runs north south. If I had to decipher what Lavrov is referring to, it's going to be this point, and this is going to be the focal point, ironically enough, focal warfare. So you notice that who has made up the largest group of illegals coming in the past 6 months? From what nation did they come from? Somebody know?
The one that speaks Chinese.
No. You're close. They speak Spanish. Venezuela. Oh.
Yeah, I was about to say Venezuela. Yeah.
They're coming from Venezuela, right? So when we tried to overthrow Maduro with a botched color revolution that, you know, of course, Nikki Haley was at the center of. She was running this from Colombia, and it went sideways. She has no idea what she's doing. And she was running that directly, by the way. And they botched this. So Russia moved in. China moved in as well. Russia invested heavily into Venezuela. They also stationed two blackjack bombers there. The blackjack bomber is incredibly significant because this is an aerial launch platform for the Iskander missiles, Iskander M. The Iskander M can be nuclear equipped, and this thing can strike the southern United States from the air. All right, and that's from Venezuela, by the way. They positioned them in Caracas, Venezuela, and never left. So you've got Lourdes pulled up there. Those aren't my overlays. Mine are better than that. But, you know, you'd have to dig back many, many years. I was, you know, so far ahead of the curve. I was, you know, this was 2017, 2018 that I did mine. But anyhow, what I project they're going to do, and this is going to happen soon, regardless of who takes office. In fact, I'm of the belief that the Russians are going to do this. If Trump, which he's obviously projected to win, regardless of cheating and all that, if he takes office, this is what they're going to do, because this is what I would do to Trump, knowing that Trump is very ego driven, and that when you bruise his ego, it kind of can throw him on his heels, and especially when you already have the chaos of the new administration coming in, which is complete chaos, right? You unveil those weapons in Havana. Right, you roll them out, so you're going to immediately spark a new Cuban Missile Crisis. That's what I very strongly believe that Lavrov is referring to. And here's the last piece of this. Right, under the Trump administration, we allowed the Intermediate Nuclear Weapons Treaty, Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty, specifically the INF, to lapse. And Trump's statement about that, and it was echoed by Pompeo, who was the Secretary of State at the time, said that, you know, we're going to negotiate a new deal to pull China in as well. Well, China made an announcement today saying that there would be no more weapons talks with the United States, specifically mentioning intermediate nuclear forces. Right. The reason that we signed that treaty, by the way, and sought it, was because of the Cuban Missile Crisis originally. Mm-hmm. Is we didn't want to put nuclear weapons in cruise missiles, smaller yield nuclear weapons into cruise missiles. So now that they know that our southern border is completely unguarded, we have lots and lots and lots of Venezuelans, specifically Colombians and, you know, whoever else, but a lot of people who want to do this country harm are already here, and they are proxies for Russia, China, and you know, that this emerging economic alliance that is countering the US dollar. So I think that's exactly what they're referring to. That is my prediction, and I'm going to say that I would be extremely surprised, by the way, if that doesn't go down, if they don't roll those weapons out, because I promise you, they deployed those weapons to Venezuela, and that was why we backed out of the Colombian election and allowed Gustavo Petro to be elected, and we didn't meddle in that election at all. It wasn't gross incompetence. It was the fact that we knew some things that we couldn't say to the public. I think that they have those weapons there, and they're going to publicly unveil those to embarrass the United States. That's going to bolster the invaders, and that's when the chaos is going to kick off.
When do you think
I concur with that. And the Russians and the Chinese are both operating in Central America, and they've been setting up for a while. And I mean, that also includes ground forces, but I think those ground forces are more concentrated around protecting those assets where they have them deployed, not like an invasion force. But certainly the ISR capability, the disruptive capability, and the intermediate range capabilities are well deployed there and easily brought in too. Because remember, they have a beachhead in Cuba, they have Venezuela, the Chinese are controlling the Panama Canal. The thing I keep bringing up, nobody wants to talk about, is the northern Arctic Sea above Canada. That to me is going to be the next big strategic boxing match. But there can, you know, I mean, if we have to go all the way down the Horn of South America to get goods, you know, around, if the Panama Canal is compromised and the Russians are controlling the northern Arctic Sea, and the Chinese are already pretty much in control of both our east and west coast ports, We're really getting constricted. So when you start turning on all those controls, And you go, oh, by the way, we could wipe out pretty much the southern parallels of the United States if you fuck with us. That's you're going to have a really strong United States leader in leadership in order to navigate through that and out of it.
Yeah, I agree. Hey, we're coming up on an hour and a half. Let's wrap this up, Matt. I know you got to go, so let's start with you for closing comments.
So, you know, the way the Warriors in training, if you're not getting out there, you're not pounding the pavement, you know, picking up something heavy, but then get that physical activity in. And it doesn't have to be anything crazy, you know, start somewhere. Definitely want to get in on a class or two, you know, start improving yourself, get yourself properly equipped as well. You know, Brush Peter Dye's store. I've got a restock of everything, by the way. You know, all of the products in the inventory are back and ready to rock and roll, including, you know, night vision, thermal, all of that stuff. Yeah, you know, it's a heavy investment. Shoot me an email. We'll talk about it. We'll talk through it. And, you know, I'll help you out to get you set up with that, everything that you need to best meet your needs and your goals. Because I'm telling you, the bad guys are going to have night vision. The really good bad guys are going to have thermal. All right. They're going to have that equipment. It's being supplied by somebody. You are behind the power curve. I've had a lot of comments, people saying, oh, wow, you know, whatever. Look, how many AR-15s do you have? You can only shoot one of them, right? How many weapons you got? You can only shoot one of them at a time. Like, oh, this is my recce setup. This is my DMR setup. Like, dude, fuck no. You need to be thinking about enablers, night vision, IR, thermal. You know, if you're not thinking in that direction, you're behind the power curve. Obviously, communications and everything, right? All the things. But we get you set up. You shoot me an email. You do it through the store. And, of course, as always, special discount code to, you know, all of the listeners. Capital letters OTOF for one team, one fight. Just OTOF at checkout. All capital letters, 5% off everything.
Sorry, Chris, I'm having a lovely conversation on mute.
exactly what Matt said. He hit all my points. Damn you. training. And it like he said, it... You know, and I have older guys get a hold of me and they're like, hey, I'm broken. What can I do? Go out and walk a mile every morning. Go out and walk 2 miles every morning. You know, whatever your body will take, you're going to get better. Carry some weight around. Integrate that into your shooting. Hopefully you're shooting. Just doing dry fire doesn't cut it. Dry fire's a thing, but that is not that whole picture, right? It doesn't replace actually getting out there and shooting rounds. And I know it's expensive, but you got to do it. And then the non-kinetic stuff, you know, I talked earlier about start noticing what's going on in your area of operations, the place you live. You know, what are the locals doing? What's law enforcement doing? What are they worried about? What are your first responders doing? Are they manned fully? Are they not manned fully? You know, are you seeing a lot of foreigners in your area? Are you seeing greenhouses pop up on the property, you know, next to you? You know, things like that should be investigated, you know, do it cautiously. Start taking notes, start taking pictures. You know, this is all perfectly legitimate stuff you can be out doing and start, you know, building basically from the ground up a small intelligence apparatus. Okay, because as we've said many times, Matt and I, intelligence drives the fight. If there's going to be a fight at some point, and we expect there will be, even if you're just trying to protect what's yours, all right, intelligence is going to drive that. All right, so I want to know who's coming against me, who's coming to take my stuff, who's coming to hurt my family, what their strength is, what their capabilities are, what they might look like, things like that. And so if you're working this piece already, right now, you know, 3 months from now, 6 months from now, a year from now, you're going to have a lot of information to draw on. Okay. So that's what I would advocate. And it requires nothing but your eyeballs, your ears, a pencil, and something to write on.
Absolutely. Troop?
Yeah, I concur with that. I kind of wanted to talk the weapon thing, so I'm Mr. Water Evangelist, right? I think you need to start with water. It should be 1, 2, and 3 on your priorities. But as far as weapons go, I mean, there's people like me. We're going to be training with Matt because I love doing that stuff. I'm a trainer as well, and I just wanted to reflect on, we get a lot of people that come out to the range, and our course is the 102 pistol course, is a 500 round, it's like 6 hour course. And I see it all the time where somebody bought their woman a gun that's either too big or too small. And the smaller ones are actually harder for the women to use than the bigger ones, because they usually have, you know, like double helical springs on them and stuff. So if you got a gun and you haven't shot it and you can't afford to go to a whole course, in Phoenix anyway, Teddy Spaghetti and I will do free training. I mean, free, you know, this is a gun. Does it work? You know, I'll show you how to use it, build your confidence and all that other stuff. But a lot of times people realize that they just have the wrong firearm. And then they go, well, I can't use this thing. Or then once we start putting through the stress trials, I've had students say, I don't honestly think I'm able to use this weapon and under stress. I just don't think I can. So you want to know that in advance. But, you know, I mean, if you're going to train with a rifle, then train with a rifle. And if you're just wanting to determine what weapon's best for you, and you know, and it's a 38 caliber revolver, and that's all you're ever going to have, and you're never going to leave the house, and you're going to be hiding in your bathroom if you ever have to use it, that's fine. But don't, you know, my thing is like scaling my capabilities and having friends. So I know I can't grow anything after 5 years of trying to grow shit. I just decided that I'm going to get a food dehydrator, a freeze dryer, and a pressure cooker. And then when all my other friends that are agricultural type of people come over with their bushel of carrots, I'm going to figure out how to steam can and dehydrate them and freeze dry them. So the point is, you know, you could just buy an endless amount of stuff. And even if you know how to use all that stuff, it's just like, you're like one of those Swiss multi-tools. It's like this wide with all of the little tools that come out of it, but they're like all too small to do anything. And then you can clutter up. So if you're living in a one bedroom apartment and you have 20 hobbies, you need to maybe edit down a little bit and maybe get with people who are like focused and good at what they do and synergize. So, you know, a lot of this is building networks, but that's knowing that you have that one thing that you're good at that you can bring to the table. And I mean, I want some thermals. I'm going to get some thermal, but I can't afford thermal like right now. But that's something that I would actually use. That may not be something that, Auntie Kravitz, you know, that who's 78 years old might use. So let's just scale the wants and the needs and the budget and the capabilities and what we're going to focus on. But start with water. Don't get paranoid. And definitely pay attention to your neighbors. And AO means area of operations. So definitely pay attention to your neighborhood. Steve and I, we need to get back at it because I moved. But I did a whole video series on overlay maps, strip maps, evacuation maps, knowing where the low points are in your neighborhood when it rains, you know, having an understanding of the different pathways in and out of where you live. And then you start to incrementally go out from there. One of the things that, you know, we're going to do is drive up to I-17 in Arizona all the way to I-40. And, you know, does this exit work? Can I pull off of this exit? Do I have 3 miles in a canyon where I can't pull over? You know, there's a lot of things that you need to be aware of that don't really cost a whole lot of money that you need to get done as well. But just situational awareness, synergizing with your friends, and water is number one. And thank you for donating to the Trooper Channel or the Trooper Care Network.
Cool. I am going to leave this right here. I think that accurately sums up the entire weekend. So I laughed hysterically when I saw this afternoon, and I think it's appropriate. So, and of course, Bracken posted it on his page, so I had to show it. But this accurately shows the high level of protection that Trump had over the weekend. And look, it doesn't matter if Trump was complicit and not complicit, it doesn't matter. Here's what matters. The bigger picture here is they achieve their aims no matter what they do. They've created more division, more strife and more vitriol between the two camps, because now it really is two camps. It's the never Trumpers and the always Trumpers, and then everybody else in the middle. There's no in between. So it is what it is. As things are going to ramp up over the next couple of weeks. So if you hear us say anything, now's the time to start preparing as much as you can. You'll hear me say it again. I'm going to keep saying it because it bears repeating. Everything we're seeing right now is a scripted event, especially the Biden shit. That's all scripted nonsense. I wouldn't even pay attention to it. They're going to replace him. How they replace him, what they replace him with, not who, what, going to be equally awful. So it's, you already know the outcome, so why worry about it? Focus on shit that matters. I will say that you're going to see a change in the show. I'm going to do an audio format. We'll do the roundtable, and I'll do sit reps, but the sit reps and the roundtable will change. So, and I'm going to take a couple of days to work through that, but got some good feedback on the show today, and I want to incorporate that into the show. So that's where that's at. So you may see an audio only show on Spotify and on Apple Podcasts, because I know a lot of people listen there. So stay tuned for that. I'll have that published in the last couple of days. Gentlemen, I appreciate you sticking on. We went a lot longer than I thought we were going to go, which we usually do. Good analysis though tonight, and we'll do this again next week. I'll be back on Friday with a situation report, because I'm sure there's going to be more shit that comes out before then. So look for that. As always, I posted where you can find me and where you can find the Trooper Care Network, because people are asking me where to find me. It's in the comments section. We'll be back next week. God bless everyone. One team, one fight.
Whoa.